Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
913-912-4810. Not going to read that text because you're a jerk.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we'll talk some Chiefs football here with Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. Just wanted to pass this along because I've seen Joe Maddon's name listed a number of times, and I remembered the quote vaguely, but I remembered it when we read it at the time of saying, Maddon probably not the next manager of the Kansas City Royals if they make a move with Mike Matheny if they want to be more analytics-driven. When Joe Maddon was fired, he had a Q&A with Ken Rosenthal in which he called the firing liberating. And Ken Rosenthal asked, why was it liberating? And he said, it's been difficult overall. I'm into analytics, but not to the point where everybody wants to shove it down your throat. Real baseball people have felt somewhat impacted by all of this. You're unable to just go to the ballpark and have fun and play baseball. It's too much controlled by front offices these days. I talked to Perry, the GM. This isn't anything new. I told him that. I said, you just try to reduce the information you're giving. Try to be aware of who's giving the information. Really be aware of when it's time to stay out of the way. In general, the industry has gone too far in that direction, and it's part of the reason people aren't into our game as much as they have been. I don't think John Sherman would be in the business of wanting to reorganize the organization to more data-driven decisions and hire somebody who wants to dial back the analytics and the data that has been given to the organization. Kind of sounds like what you had with Matheny, who was a, let's go play ball, and I like the analytics, but, you know, let's not get caught up too much of the analytics there.
I just want to know who from the KC Laboratory podcast would be the best baseball manager if one of the three of them had to be thrust into that role. I just wish we had somebody who could really give us an informed perspective on that.
Is that you, Matt, or is it Kent, or is it Craig? Who's the one that that heads to the ballpark every day and manages the Royals to a 90-win season?
Oh, man, you are asking the wrong person at KCSN to give you guys a baseball name, especially coming after Aaron Judge kept violating my TV stream while I was trying to watch college football for the past week. That's a Kent or BJ thing. That's a Kent Swanson or BJ Kissel.
Okay, absolutely. That's great. Who would look the best in having to wear the baseball uniform as a manager since they do that silly thing in
same
baseball?
Same answer, I think.
Kent or BJ?
Probably the same answer. I think they're a pretty good fit, though. I think I would get the most upset and give the most like clips for people from being upset out there, but probably just from not understanding everything about the game.
You're mad. That guy does. That's actually the rule.
Hit him!
Well, why didn't you tell me that before the game, sir?
Run him over!
You would get thrown out the most, get ejected from the game the most times. You know what?
Oh, 100%.
Have some fire. Have some passion. Matt Lane is our guest here. The Royals had some, the Chiefs had some fire and some passion against the Bucks and dominating Tampa. And it is the first time a quarterback has completed at least 75% of his passes with three or more touchdowns and no interceptions and is lost by double digits in the NFL. So that's how good the Chiefs were and the Chiefs offense and things like that. How do you assess this team? And we can look specifically at the Bucks game as well, but I wanted to take a bigger overall view to start the conversation of how do you assess this team through what used to be, you know, the first quarter of the season, but through 4 weeks so far in their 3-1 start.
I guess if you step back and look at the schedule and then you look at the Chiefs record sitting here at 3-1, after seeing how this schedule started out, you probably feel pretty good as a Chiefs fan. I think this is something we all would have taken. Now, and when you go and start looking into it and you see the one loss has come against the Colts, when a game the Chiefs clearly put forth a C-minus level effort, I think you probably have to feel pretty good how this team is looking. And yeah, there's plenty of things that have to be fixed. They got a couple injuries they've been dealing with. They got a lot of new faces they're still trying to work in. But they're 3-1 with a divisional win, you know, over the Chargers, who a lot of people had predicted, you know, going to the Super Bowl out of the AFC. Now, they've hit the annual Chargers injury bug, so maybe now the team won't be as strong. But back when they played them in week two, they were healthy. They go down to Tampa. They play Tampa. They beat an NFC Super Bowl hopeful on the road. They look really good doing so. It's like, coming out of this, you have two really good performances from the Chiefs against the Cardinals and the Bucs, a fine performance that results in a win against the Chargers, and you have the one letdown game versus the Colts. But I think you are okay with taking that in the grand scheme of things and saying, hey, the Chiefs are right back where we thought they'd be, and maybe even earlier, because it looks like they're starting to figure out some stuff on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, so if I just looked at the record, I would say, yeah, I thought that's what they would be. I had them 3-1 to start the season in the first four games. I had them 3-0 and then losing to the Bucs. But 3-1 is the record. But if I then look in the dash, right, you've got the 3-1 record, but what's the dash? What happened there to get to three wins and the one loss? And the encouraging part is that they've played four games, and half of them have been one script, and the other two have been a completely different script. So they've gone out and they've scored 40 or more points in two of the games. And then they have two games in which the offense struggled, didn't really look all that good, but the defense damn near won them both games. And to me, it's like, you know, showing the evidence of the Chiefs offense scoring in the 40s and being able to do that, especially against, you know, the number one scoring defense in the NFL coming into week four in the Bucs, and being able to put 44 against the Cardinals, 41 on Tampa, which is good without Tyreek and what this offense is going to look like. But there were so many questions about this defense, Matt, as to how long it would take. There's going to be some growing pains. There's going to be some issues, and you're just going to have to live with those. And to look at it and say, I believe the defense has already won them a game against the Chargers, and they probably should have won them another game against the Colts, so they could be 4-0 with the defense winning two of them and the offense winning two of them.
I think that's the biggest thing, right? Like, they've done it through a couple different avenues, but then you're coming into the year, and yeah, the biggest question for the Chiefs was, how is the offense going to look without having Tyreek Hill? But you kind of expect Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes to get that working. Like, you anticipate that going okay by the end of the season. This defense, though, everybody thought there'd be a big learning curve, and even along with the learning curve with this defense, the way it's kind of been over recent years, you don't expect them to be winning games against upper-flight teams like they were able to do against the Chargers. That defensive performance against the Chargers, who had a very good offense, yeah, they were without Keenan Allen and had some offensive lineman injuries, but that was still a really good performance, especially in the second half. So seeing them come out and do that with so many new faces, so many young guys on that team, and honestly still trying to figure out their best way to rush the passer without having to blitz, that's promising for moving forward, because we all trust the offense to figure it out. Now you see a defense that has historically under Spagnuolo gotten better as the season's gone on. As they get to playoffs, they've usually played a little bit better on that side of the ball. And to have them playing this good, winning you a game, arguably should have won you a second game already, you have to feel really good as a Chiefs fan about all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt Lane is our guest, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. All right, let's talk about this offense and look at this Bucs game. 9 points per game the Bucs were giving up heading into the game against the Chiefs, and they went and put 41 on them. And, you know, could have put, another touchdown or field goal on the board as well. Josh and I got into a conversation, I think, yesterday or Tuesday, whatever it was. And it was like, you know, benefit of the doubt. And I don't think, you know, Patrick Mahomes is not infallible. He is not a perfect quarterback. But I do kind of feel like he got cavalier on the drive when he threw the interception, that if they were down three in that moment, I'm not sure he just rolls left and then fires it up to Juju and it gets intercepted because of how good he was when the game sort of mattered throughout that. But the offense goes out there and puts 41 points on the board against this Bucs team, and they were so incredibly efficient, and the running game was coming around, and they were, you know, averaging 6 yards per carry. They were putting up, you know, almost 7 yards on first down. I went and looked at the stats, Matt, to talk with you. In the game against the Bucs, I shouldn't say almost seven, almost six, when you take away the goal line plays on first down, so like first and goal from the one, so you take away those and you look at the overall field on first down, they averaged 6 yards per play on first down against the Bucs, against that defense. And to me, that's a focus team, Matt, that shows when they go out there with a game plan and they're executing it and they're in tune and ready to play. Is there a defense that can slow the offense down from what we're seeing right now? Because that was incredibly impressive.
I don't think so, right? I think going into this week, we see the Buccaneers and how good they had been. I don't think they had played an offense quite as good as the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. But we had seen how good they had been up to that point. So, like, they were very much considered to be the best defense, supposedly, in the NFL. And I'm not saying that's wrong, but they come out, they get challenged. The Chiefs have a very good read on this defense from the get-go. They come out and they see him right away, whether it's the run game and getting outside the tackles, running wide against this defense was having a lot of success, whether it was how they were able to attack their linebackers in coverage because of where they were playing their safeties. Like, the Chiefs did a lot of really good stuff to beat this specific defense. But I think the bigger thing, and you alluded to it, this offense, they had a game plan. They were executing it really well. Everybody was generally playing at, you know, at their potential for this game for the Chiefs, and that resulted in them having this dominant performance. I don't know if there's a defense in the league. I guess we'll find out. Maybe not this week, but next week. Yeah. The Buffalo Bills, I think, are the next, you know, statistical best defense going right now. They have been playing great ball on that side, or great football on that side of the ball. So we'll see then. But that's kind of the last defensive challenge. If you can put up numbers against the Bucs and then the Bills this year right now, you got two different defenses with entirely different styles. But that would kind of show you that the Chiefs' offense might be close when they're playing well to as being as unstoppable as they ever have been during this Patrick Mahomes kind of tenure. I know it's lofty words, but they've kind of been that way for years. It's just a matter of you don't really stop the Chiefs' offense. They kind of stop themselves with mistakes or just not having their best game. When they have their best game, I don't think we've seen any team really go out there and out-execute their offense when it's clicking.
Not to have this team turn into a Marty Ball of the 90s, but is this the running game that you'd expect moving forward from the Chiefs and how they did it, the execution, the offensive line against that Bucs defense, as opposed to what we have seen in a couple of games this year, that it's really struggled and been head-scratching at times from what the offensive line has done and what the running backs maybe have missed with some holes? Do you think moving forward this is more indicative of what the Chiefs' running game will look like when they do hand it off?
I think it's a yes and a no. I think Shaq Barrett gave the Chiefs' offensive line a lot of ammunition to get really fired up for this game. I don't think they'll come out and say it, but if you just watch them on social media or their interactions during the game, they were fired up. So if you get this same level of fired up offensive line, yeah, I think you can have similar success a lot of times if teams are going to sit in this too high shell, if they're going to try just to play nickel and only keep two linebackers on the field, you can see similar success. I love that the Chiefs leaned into some of the gap stuff. Now, they still ran plenty of zone in this game. I think it was probably pretty close to 50-50 by the end of it, especially when they were running out the clock. They ran a lot of inside and outside zone. But it was a kind of a 50-50 split, and I just liked the way that everything paired together. I do wonder, though, if some of the runs was specific to Tampa Bay, getting those guys out on the move, pulling the offensive linemen, especially on those pitch plays when they were running the kind of pin and pull stuff. That seemed very specific against the Buccaneers' defense. So it's nice to see they have it. I don't know if you'll see that every single week, but getting the counter run, they started running just single back power with Joe Tooney specifically pulling around a lot because he's able to quickly get around the edge. Those kind of things I think we should see week in and week out, and I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Isaiah Pacheco especially, are a lot better on running those plays than they are running that typical outside or inside zone the Chiefs usually like.
Do you think we start to see more Isaiah Pacheco usage and carries and opportunities as the season progresses with at least what he looked like against the Bucs? And Andy Reid talked about it on Monday that, you know, he's not just a runner that grabs a football and goes, that he's, you know, reading it a little bit more. Do you think we're going to see more Pacheco carries and usage as the season goes along?
Yes, but I also don't know if the team is in any way, shape, or form disappointed or saddened by what Clyde Edwards-Helaire has done so far. I think he's played kind of up to the standard that they want. He still also had a really good game against the Buccaneers, too. So I don't know if you're going to see him eat much into those yards. I think right now Pacheco is still going to be in this weird timeshare with Jerick McKinnon to where if the Chiefs are picking up a lot of yards, like you were saying, 6 yards on first down, that's going to be a heavier Pacheco game. And that's how come him and McKinnon were, you know, almost even in snaps this past week because the Chiefs weren't put in obvious passing situations. I think you're still going to see McKinnon on second and long, third down, stuff like that. So it's a really weird timeshare, but I think Clyde continues to hold his kind of top rung spot. Pacheco and McKinnon are battling it out. I hope we see more Pacheco. I like the way he runs. I just don't know if there's this clear path for him getting significantly more reps than he did versus the Buccaneers.
Yeah, I'm glad you phrase it that way, that, you know, getting more Pacheco is maybe a, okay, he runs a certain style. It doesn't equate that Edwards-Helaire is having a bad season, and it's just like you're getting nothing from him, and what did the Chiefs see? I mentioned it on Monday, Matt, that, you know, it isn't Todd Haley handing the ball off to Colby Smith after Larry Johnson, you know, got injured and ignoring Jamal Charles and keep giving the ball to Colby Smith and people going and pulling their hair out going, what are you doing? He's getting 7 yards when he touches the ball. Give it to Jamal Charles. Stop. Colby Smith, fine guy. You know, stop giving him the football. Like, Edwards-Helaire has, you know, had success. He's been fine. He's been good at times. And Pacheco's, you know, been doing what he's been doing as well. Like, it's not a every time you give the ball to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you're missing out on somebody who could be one of the best running backs in the organization's history, like we saw with Colby Smith and Jamal Charles, until Colby Smith got injured and Todd Haley was like, I guess I'll put in Jamal. I guess I have to play him now. We'll see what he does.
Right, and so I agree with that. Is Pacheco still has some work to do as a runner too, even in this game where he clearly had his best game. I thought there was a couple plays where he probably chose the gap he was going to a little early, missed setting up a linebacker, would have been setting up for an easy block and kind of ran into a tackle. So, like, it's not that he was flawless. It was a very good game, but it's not like he was flawless in this game either. And then, as you mentioned, if we're going to talk about the Chiefs as a whole, everyone's kind of okay with removing the Colts game. Like, just, that was a bad game. It doesn't count. You remove that from Clyde's stats. I mean, we're looking at a guy that has just over 30 carries. He's averaging, what, 6-plus, or around 6 yards per carry right now. He's got another almost 10 yards per reception. Like, he's having a fine season for what the Chiefs have asked him to do outside of that singular game. So I think you have to do him a little bit of a favor when you're looking at this and say, okay, we are not going to count that game for him and look at what he's done. And he's been good. He's been fine. I still understand being upset about a first-round pick on any running back, but especially one that isn't super dynamic, but this is not the start of a season you really want to hang your hat on the replace Clyde Edwards-Helaire line, because, again, he's been very good through 4 weeks of the season.
Matt Lane is our guest, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. So is there value at all in breaking up games in a season by quarters without really the context? I bring that up because yesterday I was just curious that it seems like the fourth quarter teams are scoring in games, especially two of the four games that are, you know, really junk time. Like, even the Chargers touchdown, they were down 10. They could still kick the onside kick, but it, you know, they were down 10 when they scored the touchdown. So in the first quarter, the Chiefs are outscoring their opponents 34-13 in the first quarter. In the fourth quarter, they're outscored 35-23. But I feel like the fourth quarter is a result of the first quarter, if that makes sense. That the Chiefs are getting a lead, and unlike in years past, we compared it to 2020, where Carolina, Tampa, New Orleans, Miami were games where the Chiefs had control, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it's a game at the end, and you're going, how in the world is this team in it? The two games the Chiefs have started off hot and taken an early lead, they have kept the foot on the gas pedal, and they've gotten it to a point to where it was a laugher in the fourth quarter. Mahomes didn't finish the game against the Cardinals, and they were up 17 on the Bucs, where points at that time did not matter.
Right. So I think that very clearly matters. Fourth, you don't, I guess, ever want to have a big deficit in scoring in the fourth quarter, but, and I imagine this is the case with a lot of Andy Reid teams, especially with the Chiefs. I would be surprised if they were ever near the league lead in, like, score differential of that quarter, because they do get out to an early lead. Their first 15 plays historically are some of the best in the league, and they usually come out with a really good drive or two after halftime there in the third quarter. So, like, that stat does not surprise me at all. And then you start diving into these specifics, and this Buccaneers game, I was looking at it, 41-24 going into the fourth quarter. The Chiefs just kick a field goal. They force a punt, and then we have the Patrick Mahomes interception. But they're up 17. I agree with you. I think he was trying to hunt for a dagger because the game was close to being over. Still a bad play, don't get me wrong, but I think he was just hunting to completely end the game there. So, I mean, like, we're getting down to how 4 minutes left before the Buccaneers score in the fourth quarter even. So what do those points really matter that much? They got those 7 points on the board that late? Probably not in the grand scheme of things. This defense has been really good. When the game is close, especially mm-hmm. early in the game, the Chiefs' defense has been spectacular so far this year.
Yeah, visiting with Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast, and your colleague with the podcast and also with KC Sports Network, Craig Stout, I was curious about what Spagnuolo's defense was doing in the game, whether it was close or it was a wider margin, three scores or more. Was there a change in the game plan for Spagnuolo, which would obviously make sense that you would do that? And the things that he wrote at KC Sports Network, that the Chiefs defense has given up 474 yards on 82 plays when leading by three scores or more, which is like almost 6 yards per play. They're giving up 4.6 yards per play when the game is closer and it's within two scores, when it's a closer game that they might have a chance to lose. And that would be one of the best in the NFL. And what's another stat that he brought up was the opposing teams have scored on 36% of the drives against the Chiefs, which is 15th best in the league. They have scored on 60% of the drives when the Chiefs are up three scores. So eliminating those up three score drives, the Chiefs are only giving up scores on 29% of the drives when the game is within striking distance, and you know, one of the best that you'll see with Spagnuolo. And last one for you, Matt, that is the blitz rate and the pressure rate. And he had mentioned when they were up by three scores or more, the blitz rate is half, like half of what Spagnuolo typically would do. And that's what he did against the Bucs game. That's what I was really curious to know, Matt, is, you know, they were getting scores when the game was, you know, 17, you know, 21 points away for the Bucs, but when it was closer, they were getting stops. And that's even more encouraging in the fact that it seems that Spags was just simply saying, yeah, we're going to keep everything in front of us. I'm not going to blitz. We're not going to get beat over the top. And we're going to make you have longer sustained drives, which then game flow, game script does change some of the numbers if you just look at cumulative stats as to, you know, points that you give up per game when game flow can dictate what Steve Spagnuolo is doing. And I think that's the context that's also needed for how good this defense has been this year.
Absolutely. That was a fantastic article by Craig. I think you said you can find it at kcsn.substack.com. But go in there and read it, because he goes through how the Chiefs defense is playing early in games versus late, with a lead, without. It's very well worth your time. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, more or less, the moral of it is just the Chiefs defense, when games are close, when things are on the line, Steve Spagnuolo is using his entire playbook. He's blitzing. He's calling these more exotic coverages. He's getting deep into, you know, his quote-unquote bag of tricks as a defensive coordinator, and the Chiefs are having a ton of success in those situations. When they back it off, when they play a little bit more vanilla coverage, they rely on their four-man pass rush. They're just kind of trying to buy time without giving up big plays. But I also have to think a lot of it, and this is a big Andy Reid thing too, he's not trying to show everybody everything he has. He doesn't want to show all of his looks. He doesn't want to put it all on film when it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. That's been an Andy Reid staple for his entire coaching career. That's how Chiefs fans, we know, the team will be up 3-4 scores, and then by the end of the game, it's kind of sort of close. You know, you're one possession away from it being considered a close game far too frequently, and we, you know, get very upset by that. The defense is starting to do that a little bit, and that hasn't always been Spagnuolo's tendency. But I think he's kind of trending that direction since he's been in Kansas City. So I think it's a lot of Andy Reid influence. There's no reason to showcase your best blitz packages and your best rushes versus certain looks when you're up three scores in the third quarter. It just doesn't make sense. So you do have to take a lot of it with a grain of salt in this situation, because early in games, when the Chiefs defense is operating at 110% in terms of what they're trying to do, they have been one of, if not the best defense in the league in terms of not allowing other teams to score.
Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. Last one before we get a prediction. You wrote there at kcsn.substack about the rookies through the first four games of the season. How do they, as you look at the rookie class, how does it stack up through four games? What maybe you envisioned it would look like when the draft class was coming together, you know, Monday after the draft of, okay, here are the players. Through 4 weeks, what are you seeing from these guys?
So I think the biggest thing, losing Trent McDuffie early on, and he looked very good in his limited snaps as your first overall pick, the guy you trade up for, like not having him through this point in time definitely leaves a little bit of a mark here, because I think outside of him, yes, there's been Pacheco had a good game, Jalen Watson, you know, won a game with a pick six, but there's been a little bit of a lack of, I guess I want to say, flash or super dynamic play across the board. There's these isolated incidents, but they haven't had any dynamic performances from their rookies or like sustained play. Losing your first round pick, that matters. But at the end of the day, you've had essentially six guys have produced at a not just quality level, but a significant contribution level. Karlaftis is playing some of the most reps on the defensive line. And while maybe he isn't churning out crazy pressure sack numbers, he's been excellent versus the run. He's eating up snaps. He is a nuisance to opposing quarterbacks. Sky Moore finally saw an uptick in production, and his yards per route run, I think, are like third or fourth in the NFL. It's a tiny sample size, but his yards per route run are like right there next to Stephon Diggs, who a lot of people have as the best wide receiver in the NFL. Like, you can see him trending upward. Brian Cook is finding a role. Like, all these guys are finding their correct spot. So I don't think anyone should be disappointed. I think if anything, you kind of be happy that they've done, the rookie class has done this well without their top guy. I would say by now, I would be hoping that somebody starts to emerge as, I don't want to say they're going to be competing for rookie of the year, like defensive or offensive, but you would like to see somebody on that pace. And I don't know if any of their rookies are quite there, but they are all contributing at significant levels, at least the ones that are seeing playing time.
All right, Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. What happens on Monday night and a score that you may have in mind for Chiefs and Raiders?
Oh, this is, I just simply don't know if the Raiders are any good this year. It's hard to tell. Like, I haven't got to sit down and watch a ton of their games so far, but the little bits I've turned into, it looks to be a struggle. They look like a team that has a poor offensive line that doesn't really know what they're doing at this point in time. And I think that obviously shows up. They're, what, 1-3 on the year, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the Chiefs kind of control this one. I think the fact that it's a divisional game, especially a divisional home game, for this one, I think the Chiefs will show up enough that you're not going to get a letdown after the big Buccaneers win before going to the big Bills game. I think they'll show up enough. So, I mean, I think a comfortable 10-point win. So we'll say 34-24 right now, but maybe it's never even that close throughout the game. I think the Chiefs are just simply better across the board.
All right, we'll see what happens. Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. Matt, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate the time. Enjoy the football. We'll talk soon.
Thank you for having me on, guys. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Absolutely. There's Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast, KCSN.substack. And he wrote about the rookies there and looking at the entire rookie class, which through 4 weeks, you know, get an assessment of what you're seeing. And Karlaftis has been pretty steady. Watson has had some really, really big plays. Brian Cook's been good on special teams. McDuffie, unfortunately, you know. I mean, McDuffie, like the rookie class looks like this without probably their best player in the rookie class. And Daniel Jeremiah ranked his best rookies 1-25 in the NFL through the first 4 weeks of the season. And a rookie Chiefs player showed up on that list. It was Pacheco, which was a surprise. He showed up at number 25. I thought for sure Jalen Watson would show up. If you're talking about filling in for Trent McDuffie, having to play, having the pick six, being picked on as often as he is, and showing up as often as he has, not in the top 25, but he's got Pacheco at number 25, does Daniel Jeremiah. So Karlaftis has been steady. If he had a sack or two, maybe he's moved up. If the sacks matched the pressures, maybe he's in that top 25 as well. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Short segment here between this conversation with Matt and then when we hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes and also other Chiefs players. Do we know who it is?
Isaiah Pacheco and Mecole Hardman will be at the podium today.
Great. So
also, kcsportsnetwork.substack.com. You still need the .com part.
What?
Two dots in there might be sort of confusing, but just want to make sure people get to the to the good work done over there at KCSN.
That's fine. So the press conference will be Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, one player who's gaining in reps and opportunities, and one player who is losing playing time in reps and opportunities. Do I have
one
that right?
I mean, one guy's got a heel injury.
You know, heel over there, okay?
kcsportsnetwork.substack.com.
All right. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. More Zonex.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
I'm going to take the $20 and put it on Jalen Daniels. No.
I'll give you a quarter for it.
A whole quarter. I'll give Audrey a quarter, too.
Sound like a movie reference.
I can't. I'm just so disappointed in that you. It sounds like a movie reference.
I'm disappointed that you still have the capacity of being disappointed in me. My parents gave up
much
sooner.
No, there's a lot of capacity for disappointment.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Isaiah Pacheco, and Mecole Hardman.
KCSN.substack.com.
Is that right?
The .com part is mandatory. I was right to correct you on that. I got too big for my britches on KCSN, KC Sports Network. Don't worry about it. KCSportsNetwork.com.
We'll get you there.
Or KCSN.substack.com. For Kent Swanson, Craig Stout, and the aforementioned Matty Lane.
Yeah, you stepped right in and flew a little too close to the sun there, guy.
Hey, you know what? Sports or leisure today, that little reference might get you a gift card to Johnny's.
No way.
Absolutely.
I haven't even looked at the
Greek-y,
questions.
Let's get Greeky, baby. Let's get Greeky.
I love it.
Greek last week.
Greek me, baby.
Let's get Greinke.
Oh, yeah.
New manager of the Royals, Zach Greinke.
Let me Greek you
how
up.
How weird would that
down.
Baseball team be? How weird would Zach Greinke be as an everyday baseball manager? Those press conferences would be unhinged. You thought Ned Yost was wild?
I don't even care about the results. I just want that to happen now.
I know.
Let's think that into reality.
There's not enough money in the
let's
world
manifest
to get
this.
Zach Greinke to do that. He has to know he would hate that, right?
Let's manifest this. Come on. He'd have to talk twice a day,
300
every game
some
day.
Mandatory speaking dates for Zach Greinke. That doesn't feel good for anybody. I don't want to talk 300 some mandatory times.
Yeah, I mean, I got to do it 5 times a week, and I don't even want that either. 913-912-4810.
You fake it pretty well, though.
Thank you. Fake it till you make it. That's what they say. You know, it'll be fine in the end. If it's not the end, it's not fine. So. Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Isaiah Pacheco, and Mecole Hardman today. So I was reading some of those numbers by Craig Stout with Matt Lane, and I do want to reiterate those a little bit because it goes right into what we were talking about this week about, you know, they gave up 31 points. Is there something different that they were doing? And
is in Craig's story from this morning?
Yes.
Let's check it out.
Craig's story.
KCSN.substack.com.
Oh, that's where you're going.
I feel bad about giving out the wrong URL for a couple of minutes.
For lots of
so
lots
you can read,
of times.
You can read it from Craig also. Sometimes it's easier to read than to hear numbers and stuff. So, you know,
okay,
audiobook and the book in front of you.
So you can look at the overall rate where the Chiefs rank 5th in pressure rate this season at 29%. But when the game is inside 2 scores, the Chiefs are pressuring at 32.5%, which is 2nd only to San Francisco and their monster D-line. So the context that goes along with it and the blitz rate is halved in the scenarios that are more than 2 scores. So within 2 scores, he's blitzing twice as often as he is when it's more than 2 scores. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're seeing the pressure rate drop, because let's just send the 4. It'd be great to get a sack with the 4, and we're still pressuring on whatever it might be, you know, 21% of the dropbacks when we're up by 3 scores. But I'm going to send these guys out there and not give up a quick, long touchdown for them to get back in the game. They are going to drive the length of the field. We're going to keep everything in front of them. Also, you might give up more yards per play if your safeties are deeper and they're throwing the ball underneath a little more yards to run. So your yards per play can increase. Your pressure percentage goes down, but the length of the drive increases and the win probability also continues to increase as the time ticks away, knowing that your offense can do what they can do. The numbers by Craig Stout, and I love that, back up what we were wondering about Steve Spagnuolo, is did he do things different in the game when it was a wider margin as opposed to when it was a closer game? And those numbers say yes, in fact, he did. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll hear from the Chiefs next.